Okay, are we ready for a deep dive into a case that I think throws a real wrench into contract law and negotiation tactics? We're talking Summerco v. Blakeslee Midwest Co.
Yeah.
A real classic David and Goliath story, subcontractor going head to head with a bigger company.
Right.
And the whole thing just hinges on this idea of economic duress in settlement agreements.
Yeah, it's what's fascinating about this case is how the court really tries to find the sweet spot between,
Really?
recognizing that, yeah, negotiations can get pretty intense
Yeah.
and protecting someone from being truly forced into a bad deal.
Right. So the big question we're tackling today is this. Can a company's financial troubles alone be enough to say, nope, that settlement's invalid, they were pressured? Or does there need to be something more, some kind of shady move by the other side to really make it stick?
That's the crux of it. And Summer v. Blakeslee provides some really insightful answers, I think, that lawyers and law students should definitely have on their radar.
Okay, so let's set the stage here. We've got Selmer, the subcontractor. They signed a pretty standard contract for a construction project. $210,000 sounds simple enough, right?
Yeah, and then Blakeslee Midwest, the general contractor, they messed up.
Oh boy.
They were seriously late delivering essential materials, and this delay caused all sorts of problems for Selmer,
Oh yeah.
costing them way more than they had planned.
I can
The
imagine.
kind of scenario that makes any project manager just
Oh,
cringe.
absolutely. But here's the catch. Summer could have walked away. The contract allowed them to say, this isn't working, we're out, without penalty. They had a legal out because of Blakeslee Midwest's breach.
And that's where it gets interesting. They didn't walk away.
They didn't.
Instead, they struck a deal with Blakeslee Midwest to keep working and cover those extra costs.
So they're trying to make the project work. They're trying to be the good guys here. But then the project wraps up, Selmer tolls up all their extra expenses, a staggering $120,000, and presents the bill to Blakeslee Midwest.
Oh boy.
You can probably guess what happens next.
Not exactly a warm reception, right?
Yeah.
Blakeslee Midwest comes back with a much lower offer, $67,000.
Wow.
A pretty big difference.
That's a huge difference. And to make matters even worse, Selmer was in dire straits financially. They needed that money, and Blakeslee Midwest knew it.
It's that classic power imbalance that can make these economic duress claims so tricky.
Exactly. So Blakeslee Midwest essentially throws down the gauntlet. Take the $67,000 or you get nothing. Classic take it or leave it situation. And Selmer, feeling completely trapped, accepts.
Fast forward 2.5 years, Selmer decides to fight back. They sue, arguing that that settlement agreement should be voided because they were under economic duress, their claim. Blakeslee Midwest exploited their financial vulnerability to force them into taking this lowball offer.
So, what do the courts have to say about this? Was Selmer's desperation enough to prove they were coerced?
Well, this is where Selmer v. Blakeslee gets really interesting. Both the district court and the court of appeals ended up siding with Blakeslee Midwest.
Oh, wow.
They said, yes, Selmer's financial struggles were very real, but they weren't directly caused by Blakeslee Midwest during that final settlement negotiation.
Wait, but didn't the initial breach, like those delays that caused Selmer to bleed money in the first place, didn't that contribute to their problems? I mean, it seems like there's a connection there.
And that's where the courts draw this really crucial line.
Okay.
Remember, Selmer chose to keep working on the project even after that initial breach.
Right.
They could have walked away
Right.
and started the legal battle then, but they didn't.
So by staying on, they assumed the risk of things getting even worse financially. That's a tough lesson.
That's exactly the court's logic.
Wow.
And it highlights a key point. Just because a company drives a hard bargain, even a take it or leave it offer,
Yeah.
doesn't automatically mean it's economic duress.
Right.
It's a nuance that I think a lot of people get wrong.
So where is that line then between tough negotiating and genuine coercion? What does Summer v. Blakeslee tell us about that?
The court was very clear on this point. To prove economic duress and overturn a settlement, there has to be wrongful conduct that directly leads to the financial hardship you're claiming. Think of it this way. Blakeslee Midwest might have played hardball, but they didn't create the financial mess that Selmer was already in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So it sounds like Selmer v. Blakeslee really provides a roadmap for understanding how courts analyze these situations.
It does. And it's a case I think that, lawyers especially need to be aware of.
All right, so let's unpack that roadmap a bit. You mentioned wrongful conduct. What exactly does that mean in this context? What kind of actions would actually cross the line?
Yeah, that's where the court dives into some really fascinating legal territory. They scrutinize this idea of a threat in the context of economic duress. Because remember, not all threats are created equal.
Right. The typical back and forth of a negotiation, that's not really enough, is it?
Exactly. Every negotiation involves some level of pressure.
Yeah.
Both sides are trying to get the best deal for themselves. So what the court in Selmer says is this. A threat becomes legally problematic when it takes advantage of someone's lack of a viable legal remedy.
Okay.
And it goes beyond what we as a society would consider acceptable behavior.
So it's like they're exploiting a weakness that they themselves helped to create.
You got it. It's one thing to negotiate hard.
Right.
But it's another to use someone's, you know, dire circumstances as leverage to force them into a deal they wouldn't otherwise accept.
Okay, but let's go back to Blakeslee Midwest actions for a second. They basically gave Selmer an ultimatum.
Right.
Take the $67,000 or get nothing.
Yeah.
Was that considered a legitimate tactic or did that cross the line?
So here's where context is really crucial.
Okay.
Yes, it was a take it or leave it offer.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, Blakeslee Midwest wasn't creating a problem out of thin air.
Right.
Selmer had options,
right,
even if they were difficult ones.
Right. They could have walked away from the project when the breach happened.
Exactly. What the court's saying is, look, Selmer made a calculated business decision to stay on this project knowing there were risks.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're facing the consequences of that decision.
It's going to be frustrating for Selmer, though, right? I mean, they were in a bind and Blakeslee Midwest knew it.
It definitely puts companies like Selmer in a difficult position.
Yeah.
But the court's decision here really reflects a broader principle in contract law, the importance of upholding agreements.
Mm-hmm.
If we started unraveling settlements every time someone felt they'd gotten a raw deal,
right,
it would just create chaos.
So there's this need for predictability in business dealings.
Absolutely.
People need to be able to rely on the contracts that they sign.
Right. Now, that doesn't mean that the courts ignore situations where there's a power imbalance.
Right.
But to prove economic duress, you need to meet a very specific legal test.
Okay.
And that's what we're going to break down right now, because this is where things get really interesting.
All right. Lay it on us. What does this legal test entail? What do you have to prove to convince a court that you were truly under duress?
Well, the court in Selmer v. Blakeslee, they laid out this three-pronged test.
Okay.
And you have to satisfy all three prongs to invalidate a settlement because of economic duress.
All right. Hit me with prong number one.
The first one, you have to prove that there was wrongful conduct by the other party.
Okay.
And that this conduct actually caused your financial distress.
So it can't just be like tough talk.
Right.
There needs to be something more.
Right. Something that goes beyond what's just considered, you know, acceptable behavior in a negotiation.
So like intentionally sabotaging the project to drive up costs.
Yeah.
Or making threats that go beyond the scope of the contract.
Those are great examples. It has to be something that feels inherently, you know, wrong or unfair.
Right.
Like they're really exploiting your power in a way that we as a society don't want to condone.
Got it. What about the second prong?
The second prong requires you to demonstrate that the settlement terms themselves were unreasonable. Okay.
It's not enough to simply say you got a bad deal. You need to show that the terms were demonstrably unfair, like significantly below market value or completely out of line with industry standards.
So if they offer you pennies on the dollar for work that you legitimately perform, that might qualify.
Exactly. It has to be something that raises eyebrows and makes people say, whoa, that doesn't seem right.
Makes sense. All right, so bring on the final prong.
The third prong, and this one is crucial,
okay,
is that you have to prove that you had no reasonable alternatives but to accept that settlement. The court wants to see that you were truly backed into a corner with no other viable option.
So if you could have pursued legal action,
right,
gotten a loan from a bank,
right,
or found another way to kind of mitigate your financial losses, that weakens your claim of duress.
Precisely. The court wants to see that you exhausted all reasonable avenues before succumbing to that pressure. So in Selmer's case, they couldn't prove that first prong, right? The court didn't believe that Blakeslee Midwest's actions directly caused their financial troubles.
Right. And they also struggled with that third prong, the lack of alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they could have walked away earlier.
Yeah.
They chose to stay on, which the court saw as implying a level of acceptance of the potential consequences.
Okay. I'm starting to understand the legal reasoning here.
Right.
But it still feels like there's this gray area.
Yeah.
You know, Where's that exact line between acceptable negotiation tactics and something that crosses over into duress?
It's definitely a blurry line.
Yeah.
And that's why this case is so important. It provides some guidelines, but there's always going to be room for interpretation based on the specific facts of each case.
So it's a cautionary tale for both sides, right? Companies need to be careful not to overstep their bounds in these negotiations.
Yeah.
And those who find themselves on the receiving end of these tough tactics need to understand their rights and their options.
That's a great way to put it. Selmer v. Blakeslee is a reminder that knowledge is power.
Absolutely.
In the world of contracts.
This has been incredibly insightful. But before we wrap up, I want to circle back to something you touched on earlier.
Yeah.
The court's emphasis on the finality of agreements.
Mm-hmm.
They seemed pretty adamant that settlements shouldn't be easily overturned. Why is that so important?
That's a great question, and it gets to the heart of why contract law exists in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
The courts want to encourage parties to resolve their disputes and move on.
Right.
If settlements were constantly being challenged and unwound,
yeah,
it would create uncertainty and undermine the whole system.
It would make businesses hesitant to settle at all.
Right.
Why bother if there's a good chance the agreement could just be torn up later?
Exactly. And it would clog up the courts with even more litigation.
Yeah.
So there's a strong public policy rationale for upholding the finality of these settlements.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about situations where there was genuine wrongdoing? Like one party lied or defrauded the other during the negotiation.
That's a really important point, and there are exceptions to this general rule.
Mm-hmm.
Courts won't enforce contracts that were formed through, you know, illegal or unethical means.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can prove that you were tricked or coerced into signing an agreement,
yeah,
you might have grounds to have it invalidated.
So there are safeguards in place to protect people from being taken advantage of.
Absolutely.
It's reassuring.
The law recognizes that not all contracts are created equal.
Right.
Some agreements are simply unenforceable because they violate basic principles of fairness and justice.
All right, I'm feeling much more informed about all the complexities of economic duress and how it plays out in real-world cases like Selmer v. Blakeslee. This has been really eye-opening.
Yeah, it's a case that every lawyer, I think, should have in their back pocket. It highlights that fine line between aggressive negotiation and crossing the line into duress.
Well said. So what does all this mean for our listeners out there? What practical steps can they take to protect themselves in these contract negotiations?
That's a great question, and that's what we're going to explore in detail when we come back for the final part of our deep dive into Selmer v. Blakeslee.
Okay, we are back and ready to wrap up our deep dive into Selmer v. Blakeslee. We've covered a lot of ground here, from the initial contract breach to the court's reasoning on economic duress.
Right.
And that crucial three-pronged test.
Right.
But what does it all mean for someone who's actually in a tough negotiation? You know, what are those takeaways that can help you protect yourself?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And I think Selmer provides some really practical insights, especially, I think, for lawyers who are advising their clients.
Okay, so let's break it down. What's the first thing you would tell someone walking into a negotiation where they feel like the other side might try to pull Blakeslee Midwest?
Documentation.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
You've heard it before, but Selmer v. Blakeslee really underscores just how crucial this is. If you even suspect that you're being pressured into an unfair deal, keep detailed records of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Emails, letters, notes from phone calls, meeting minutes.
Okay.
Anything that shows the other party's conduct and how it's impacting your financial situation.
So if they're making threats, if they're delaying payments, if they're changing the scope of the project at the last minute, get it all in writing.
Yes.
It could be your saving grace later on if you need to prove economic duress.
Exactly. Because remember, it's not enough to just feel pressured.
Right.
You need to be able to demonstrate to a court that the other party's actions directly caused your financial hardship. And a clear paper trail is absolutely essential for that.
This makes me think about how important it is to have a good lawyer involved early on.
Yes.
Not just when things go south.
Absolutely.
But they can help you spot those red flags and make sure you're documenting everything properly.
A skilled lawyer can be so invaluable in these situations. They can help you analyze the contract, assess the risks, and guide you on the best strategies for negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that might mean pushing back really hard, but other times it might mean knowing when to walk away from a bad deal.
You know, that's something we haven't talked about much, but it's a tough decision, right?
Yeah.
Walking away even when you're in a difficult financial position.
It is.
But Selmer shows us that sometimes it's the smartest move in the long run.
Absolutely. Remember, Selmer could have walked away after that initial breach.
Right.
But they chose to stay on. And the court ultimately held that against them.
Wow.
So it doesn't mean walking away is always easy or feasible.
Right.
But it's crucial to understand it as an option.
And I think that's a key point for our listeners. Selmer V. Blakeslee highlights the importance of understanding your alternatives.
Yes.
Can you get a loan? Can you find another project? Can you pursue legal action? Knowing your options gives you leverage in a negotiation.
It does, because that third prong of the economic duress test, having no reasonable alternatives, that's often where these cases hinge.
Right.
If you can show that you had other viable options but were forced into a settlement anyway, that strengthens your claim significantly.
So in a way, this case is as much about strategy as it is about the law, right? It's about knowing the rules of the game, anticipating the other side's moves, and making informed decisions to protect yourself.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah. And that's why we do these deep dives.
Yeah.
We want to empower our listeners with the knowledge they need to navigate these complex legal situations.
Well, I think we've accomplished that today. Selmer V. Blakeslee is a case with a lot of twists and turns.
It is.
But it ultimately boils down to some core principles. Understanding the elements of economic duress, documenting everything, knowing your alternatives, and getting good legal advice.
And perhaps most importantly, remembering that while business can be tough, it shouldn't be about taking advantage of someone else's misfortune. There's a line between hard bargaining and crossing into unethical territory.
Right.
And I think Selmer provides a really valuable framework for recognizing that line.
Couldn't agree more. So to everyone listening, next time you find yourself in a tough negotiation, remember the lessons of Selmer V. Blakeslee. Stay informed, stay vigilant, and always protect your interests.
Great advice. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Until next time.